The skies in Philadelphia are clear, but inside the Pennsylvania Convention Center, more than 8,000 public librarians have gathered under cloudy and foggy conditions to ponder the challenge of ebook pricing and availability. Meanwhile, publishers are pondering their future as print sales fall in 2011, while 90 ebook titles ring up sales of more than 100,000 copies. Welcome, everyone, to our special Friday feature in CCC's podcast series. My name is Chris Keneally, and every week, Copyright Clearance Center's Beyond the Book speaks with the editors and reporters of Publishers Weekly for an early look at the news that publishers, editors, authors, agents, and librarians will talk about when they return to work on Monday. And joining me first on the show from Philadelphia is Andrew Albanese, PW's Features Editor. Andrew, welcome back to Beyond the Book.
Hey, Chris. Greetings from Philly.
Well, it's good to have you join us. And I guess we should start off by asking you, so what have you seen so far? And how does it all relate to what you've been telling us throughout the last few weeks with regard to the challenge that librarians of all kinds are having?
The challenges are still there. Greetings from Philadelphia, Chris, where the 2012 Public Library Association meeting is underway. For those of you who may not know, PLA is a division of ALA, the American Library Association, and it's a big popular division at that with over 9,000 members. This meeting, it comes every 2 years. And the good news is that this year's meeting is on pace to post very strong attendance. It looks like they might get 8,000 attendees, and over 400 exhibitors are already here. So that's some really great news, especially in light of what was a pretty lackluster midwinter meeting in Dallas this past January. But then again, the lackluster attendance in Dallas was probably likely due to people choosing to come to Philadelphia in March. You know, you've got limited dollars. You got to pick where you can go. You go to Philly rather than Dallas. But so far, it's been a really great program. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. kicked off the opening keynote on Wednesday, and it was very inspiring. He talked a lot about his environmental work, but at the heart of his talk was a message that really resonated with librarians about democracy, about protecting the commons, and about the power of markets and technology to affect change that isn't just good for, you know, billionaires, but that can enrich us all. At one point, he likened our energy future to the future of information, and he suggested that technology was going to do for energy what it has done for information, which is to drop the cost to virtually zero and to enable a slew of new ventures that are going to come along and innovate. So that was a really great kickoff to a great slate of programs, and we'll have more on that in the coming weeks at PW. I'll say this for the programming so far. There's a noticeable bent on advocacy and the professional work of librarians in public libraries, and so the conversations seem to be very much focusing on the things that libraries can do and are doing. So in that regard, despite continued funding woes, it's been very upbeat so far. Some might even say it's been sunny in Philadelphia. But of course, the ebook question looms over the conference and is very much on everyone's mind. In the introductions to the opening keynote, the ebook issue was mentioned numerous times, including an update from incoming ALA President Maureen Sullivan, who incidentally was giving that incoming update because the current ALA President, Molly Raphael, was actually in New York at the AAP meeting talking about, you guessed it, ebooks. And there's definitely a sense of frustration, even resignation, about what is going to be accomplished when it comes to the ebook realm. As you recall, coming out of ALA midwinter, some ALA officials, including Molly Raphael, had set up meetings with New York publishers to sort of push the ebook lending issue. Well, those meetings have not convinced publishers to change their minds. And in fact, Penguin has since pulled out of ebook lending, and Random House has tripled the price of library books. So things seem to be taking a step backwards. But the issue is very much live, and it's going to be interesting to see where things are coming out of PLA and going into ALA, which I believe is in Anaheim in June.
Well, you know, it must seem rather quiet around the PW offices this week because you're there in Philadelphia, and Calvin Reed and some others from the staff are in Austin for the South by Southwest Interactive Festival.
That's right. Calvin and Rachel Deal have been in Austin, and they're going to have more on South by Southwest coming up in Monday's issue. You'll definitely want to look for that. But it sounds like, from what I've been hearing from them, it's been a really great show. And, you know, book publishing didn't have a very smooth entry into the South by Southwest atmosphere. A few years ago, one of the first publishing panels, you may recall, was pretty much slammed by some of the attendees who kind of mocked the book business for being out of touch. You know, if you don't recall that, you should Google it and look it up. It was, you know, pretty comical and must have been pretty harrowing for some of the publishing people that were there at the time.
I was just going to say, Andrew, I mean, saying that it got slammed was putting it mildly. It got trashed is how I would have put it.
It really did. And, you know, publishing people are great people. They come in with good intentions, and to be, you know, treated that harshly at a conference, I think was, must have been a shock to them for sure. We're usually a very polite bunch at our conferences. But anyway, this isn't the case anymore because, you know, publishing has really become a big part of South by Southwest as they've rolled out their interactive conference. The attendance has ballooned significantly, Calvin and Rachel report, and the publishing business is very much a part of what South by Southwest is doing. And it's really sort of becoming a place where publishing people can come to talk about big picture ideas and the future of content, as well as the future of the book. And it's also a place to hear about interesting new startups. So what I hear from Rachel and Calvin was that there was a really noticeable contingent of book people in Austin this year, including, you know, staff from Perseus and FSG and other press. Open Road was there. The San Francisco Booksmith was there. Random House, HarperCollins, Wiley. So there was they were really well represented in Austin this year. And of course, there was the Tools of Change Festival that led into the Austin, to South by Southwest this year as well. So, you know, one observation I'll have is that, you know, bringing the book business into South by Southwest really makes a lot of sense from where I sit. And as you know, in the last few years, book conferences have really sort of welcomed, you know, the South by Southwest tech contingency into their shows, perhaps most notably at the Frankfurt Book Fair with this Frankfurt Academy Initiative and the Story Drive components, but also at BEA and at London, which has the Digital Zone. And then, of course, you have Digital Book World and Tools of Change, etc. So, you know, this is a win-win as far as I'm concerned in terms of, you know, publishers sharing their expertise in finding and building content and, you know, stories for that matter, and for publishers in terms of opening their eyes to the new possibilities that are out there. It was Calvin and Rachel reported this week, there's, you know, real value, I think, to South by Southwest, especially this chance to hear about new startups and how executives and creatives and other industries are approaching, you know, their own shifting marketplaces and new business models and, you know, well, just a culture of experimentation. So we're going to have a lot more on that in Monday's issue. And you know, I really look forward to South by Southwest continuing to grow for the publishing industry.
Well, you know, I would agree. It certainly seems like a place to go if you want a glimpse of the future. As somebody said, you know, the future is already here. It's just not evenly distributed. And Austin somehow gets a greater share of the future than a lot of other places do. Also, in this issue coming up, you've got some reports on the recent past.
Yes. Monday's issue is our annual facts and figures issue. So every year, we know we ask publishers to submit their build and ship totals for books published in the previous year. And we run lists for hardcover adult fiction and nonfiction, adult paperbacks, ebooks, and also for children's, you know, hardcover, paperback, ebooks. Last year was actually the first time that we asked for ebook sales. So that set up some interesting comparisons. You know, I'll give you a few highlights. And of course, you know, we're talking about the rise of ebooks here. In 2010, on the adult side, there were only 16 titles that sold more than 100,000 ebooks, and that was led by The Girl Who Kicked the Hornet's Nest, which sold 775,000 copies. This year, which reports on 2011, we saw 90 titles ringing up more than 100,000 copies, led by The Help, that sold almost 2 million copies. On the children's and YA side in ebooks, the climb was a little less pronounced, but still pretty substantial. In 2010, there were 6 titles that sold more than 100,000 ebooks in children's and YA, and that was led by Stephanie Meyer, that sold 145,000 copies. In 2011, there were 15 titles led by Suzanne Collins' The Hunger Games, which sold over 1 million. Now, of course, as a related consequence to the rise in ebooks is the drop hardcover totals. And this year, our list showed that the hardcover leaders in both adult and children's were less than the year before. So it's a tale of two industries, you know, ebooks on the rise and hardcovers continuing to decline.
Well, Andrew Albanese in Philadelphia at the PLA conference, thank you so much for that. And now we want to turn to Rose Fox, our PW Reviews editor who blogs at Genreville. And welcome to Beyond the Book, Rose.
Thank you, Chris. And as your resident science fiction expert, I should let you know that that quote about the future not being evenly distributed comes from science fiction author William Gibson. So now you know.
There you go. I think the man who also coined the phrase cyberspace. So he's definitely a quotable fellow. Rose, we've got a lot to cover as usual, but we'll start off by going to the turn of the century. And I don't mean the year 2000. I mean way back to the last century.
That's right. Our fiction section has a lot from the early and middle 1900s. We have a Q&A with Beatrice Williams, author of Overseas, which is a novel that goes between the present day and the World War I era. And she talks about a lifetime of studying that era in Britain and says that her goal with the novel was to turn cynics into romantics. We also review The Uninvited Guests by Sadie Jones. This is a remarkable dark comedy, says our reviewer. And it's set sometime in the early part of the 20th century. Somewhere in the north of England, but apparently the ambiguity there is quite intentional and related to the plot. And we review Vandal Love, which is a fiction debut by journalist Denny Y. Bichaud, and it's a moving and entertaining debut set in mid-20th century Quebec, in which the children of the Hervé family are either runts, whom the patriarch foists off on others, or giants who are kept around for labor, and it's the tale of two brothers from that family. In Mysteries and Thrillers, Marcia Clark, best known as the prosecutor in the O.J. Simpson murder trial, follows her debut, Guilt by Association, with a second mystery, Guilt by Degrees, in which her heroine, Los Angeles Deputy D.A. Rachel Knight, looks into the stabbing death of a homeless person. And our reviewer says Clark gets the mix of action and investigative legwork just right. Also, Bruce De Silva, whose Rogue Island won the 2011 Edgar Award for Best First Novel, delivers the sequel Cliff Walk, in which Liam Mulligan, a reporter for a declining Providence newspaper, checks out the murder of a pornographer.
You know, you've got some historical debuts this week, and they include PDs with MDs, so to speak.
Yeah, we have two debuts with Doctors as Sleuths, and we also have a Q&A with Steve Ulfelder, who the author of The Whole Lie, and this is the second in his series starting no-nonsense auto mechanic and sometime sleuth Sax Conway, and he talks about being inspired by meetings of an Alcoholics Anonymous group near his home. In science fiction, fantasy, and horror, we have an enormous anthology called The Weird, over 1,000 pages, edited by Anne and Jeff Vandermeer. It is ambitious in the extreme, compiling 110 weird stories from around the world and throughout the past century. And our reviewer calls it a deeply affectionate and respectful history of speculative fiction's blurry edges. You could read a story a night from this and have your mind blown every night. It's just an extraordinary undertaking. In romance, Sally McKenzie's Bedding Lord Ned, an engaging Regency romance that balances greed, jealousy, and malice with humor and sweetness, is the first of three books in which a matchmaking duchess helps young people find love. In comics, we also have young people finding love. We have Kevin Keller by Dan Parent, and that provides backstory on the first openly gay character in the world of Archie comics. And it makes it clear that Kevin, like Archie and the rest of the gang, is just a nice kid.
In nonfiction, there are a number of titles that take us to war.
Yeah, we have a whole range. We start with More Than Freedom by Stephen Katrowitz, which reappraises the role of African-American activists before and after the Civil War in the U.S., emphasizing that from the very beginning, they fought for the full promises and privileges of American citizenship, despite tremendous odds against them. Freedom's Forge by Arthur Herman tells the epic story of the American businessman who helped America become the largest military power in history, and whose efforts led to the Allied victory in World War II. And finally, coming up to the present day, electrical engineer Brian Kastner did three tours in Saudi Arabia and Iraq, finding and defusing bombs. And he wrote The Long Walk, which is a chilling account of those years and their aftermath. And we'll be running a Q&A with him in a future issue. Elsewhere in nonfiction, we have This Is How, Augustine Burroughs' hilarious and searingly straightforward memoir. And this book is subtitled Help for the Self, Proven Aid in Overcoming Shyness, Molestation, Fatness, Spinsterhood, Grief, Disease, Luxury, Decrepitude, and More for the Young and Old Alike. So I don't think there's anything more I can say about that. And we have Jimi Hendrix, A Brother's Story by Leon Hendrix with Adam Mitchell. And this is a balanced and honest story of Leon and Jimmy's parents' broken marriage and substance abuse, and the peripatetic life the boys led with their father.
On a quieter note, Rose, there's an interesting title out in the lifestyle section.
Yeah, in the food area of the lifestyle section, we have Ripe. Again, the subtitle kind of says it all. It's called A Fresh, Colorful Approach to Fruits and Vegetables by Cheryl Sternman Rule, who's a well-known food blogger. And this is a lovely and gorgeous book. It's organized by color. So usually cookbooks might be organized by season or by ingredient, but instead she really goes through and color by color tries to excite readers with delectable photographs as well as mouth-watering recipes. In religion, we have God of Love, A Guide to the Heart of Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, in which Mirabai Starr writes about the three Abrahamic religions as a woman in love, and she really tries to tie them all not only to one another, but to questions facing people in the modern world. In children's picture books, we have six picture books with international flavor. They tell stories from England, Eastern Africa, Japan, Finland, and the Philippines, as well as a story of Chinese immigrants in America. And there are also two very different picture book biographies of Julia Child to mark her 100th birthday. In children's fiction, Jerry Spinelli adroitly balances emotional tension with introspective moments in Jake and Lily, which is a smart and funny story about twins growing apart. And Waiting by Carol Lynch Williams is both gritty and inspirational, telling the story of a high school student whose older brother commits suicide. In children's religion, we have Fail State by John W. Ott, which balances fantasy with teen hormones in a clever and page-turning debut in which amateur superheroes compete on reality TV to win a government license to fight crime. And I'm sure you can imagine how that might appeal to teenagers. In our online reviews annex, Chana Wilson breaks the silence on the trauma of oppression and the ecstasy of self-acceptance in her memoir Riding Fury Home, wherein she chronicles her sexual awakening and her mother's tragic mental illness. And Frank Delaney wraps up his Ben McCarthy trilogy with the riveting book The Last Storyteller. And finally, we have our pick of the week, which is Dead Scared by S.J. Bolton, and that's a police procedural starring Detective Constable Lacey Flint, who goes undercover to investigate a series of suicides at Cambridge University.
Well, Rose Fox, who blogs at John McVille for PW, thank you, as always, for that rundown of the latest reviews in this week's issue.
You're very welcome, Chris.
And again, Andrew Albanese joining us today from Philadelphia at the PLA conference. Thank you for joining us.
My pleasure, Chris.
We should tell everybody that Beyond the Book is produced by Copyright Clearance Center, a global rights broker for the world's most sought-after materials, including millions of books and ebooks, journals, newspapers, magazines, and blogs, as well as now images, movies, and television shows. You can follow Beyond the Book on Twitter, like Beyond the Book on Facebook, and subscribe to the free podcast series on iTunes or at our website, copyright.com/beyondthebook. Our engineer is Jeremy Brisky of Burst Marketing. My name is Christopher Keneally. For all of us at Copyright Clearance Center, thanks for listening to Beyond the Book.